Welcome to Family Matters, the Adoption UK podcast. My name is Sarah and I'm introducing today's episode, which is a conversation between James and Dav. James, you are an adoptee and a graduate of screenwriting. Congratulations, from the University of South Wales. Is that right? And is there anything you would like to add to that?
No, that was pretty good. Yeah.
Great. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
And Dav, you are a playwright, screenwriter, composer and performer. I'm sure there's loads of other things as well.
Many talents.
Many listeners will know of your recent and acclaimed BBC series, Lost Boys and Fairies, about a same-sex couple who become adopted parents. Welcome, Dav.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I have to start by saying Wales, screenwriting, adoption. What a beautiful synergy between you both. I've been longing to get you both together, so I'm really pleased you're here. And I'm going to hand over now to James, who is going to kick off the conversation.
Can I just say before we start as well, I've been waiting for this for a very long time too, because I met this young man at a conference. We were just saying about, it's nearly a year ago now, and I just think he's brilliant. And I think he's such a fantastic role model for adoption. So I'm so delighted to be sharing this time with him now.
Oh, thank you. Don't make me cry.
And it's true, James.
Thank you. And same to you as well. You're absolutely amazing. And you know, I think a TV show like Lost Boys and Fairies has been like long in the making, because, you know, as this podcast is about, you know, it's adoption and representation. And I think that historically it's been quite a mixed bag. But I think what was really, really good about Lost Boys and Fairies is that it really showed the rawness and the nuance of adoption from both the adopters and from the adoptee as well. Played by amazing actors. They were just brilliant, weren't they?
They were an absolute gift for me, and you know, as a writer, they were extraordinary, and I was really lucky to have them, you know.
And so many familiar faces as well, you know, Elizabeth Barrington, Shaheen, who you know from like EastEnders and Casualty, and there's Sharon D. Clarke, who I know because I'm a massive Doctor Who fan. She played Grace in Doctor Who. It's just so many brilliant people, and you know, they just beautifully brought to life those characters. And you know, I think especially Leo, who played Jake, you know, he was amazing. And you know, and he was nominated for awards as well, and absolutely well deserved.
I mean, brilliant. So many of them were, which is just a really, really beautiful thing. And you know, and Sean Daniel Young, who played Gabriel, and Fra Fee, and Gwyneth Keyworth, who of course played the birth mum as well. There was just a wonderful cast, and also people like Arwell Griffith, who played Bedouin, or his drag persona Fanny Ample, was my very first theatre director for the very first play that I wrote. So that was, and Sean was actually in that play playing a teenage boy. So the full circle of the way that my life has gone and these projects have gone, and the coming together of that community, both queer and Welsh speaking, as well as the adoptive community within the cast as well, was really, really exciting to me.
That must have been amazing. It's like everything you wanted just kind of came out of your mind and it was there.
It doesn't always happen.
I've heard many stories from the industry, plenty of stories, but you know, I think very lucky that you really got to kind of, I guess, do what you want. You know, it's how you wanted it to be. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing. I cried, I laughed. I actually, you know, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it. You know, at the end of episode 2, Andy dies. And I actually couldn't watch the third episode for like probably a day, 2 days, because I was like so shocked that you know he died. But then, you know, I did watch the episode and it was really, really emotional. But I think it just, you know, really grappled so well with those feelings of loss, especially with Jake, because obviously, you know, he's making that attachment and bond with, you know, with his soon-to-be parents, and then one of them dies, and you know that's
and you know what, James, you're hitting on something really important there, because I have had many people who've loved the show, just that slightly frustrated question I find is, did you have to kill Andy though? And then I have to say, well, what did you think of the third episode if you got there? I mean, some people might not have got there. And they have a very strong emotional and powerful response to that third episode. And the point is, you can't have that powerful, strong response to that last episode if we didn't suffer the loss we do at the end of episode two. And I think crucially what you were saying there as well, what that does is, as an audience, I mean, you can't get close to it because it's a simulation, but to an audience, you're trying to dramatize in a way the type of loss that kids, children who have been adopted, have experienced. You know, the type of grief, being torn from birth families, being torn from foster carers. They live through this very complex grief. And just, that's what I was trying to do with that. And on top of that, within a three-parter, what we then get from an adoption perspective is not only representation of a gay couple adopting, but we also get to tell a story of a single adopter adopting. And that was really, really crucial and important to me, because I have many friends who've adopted as single adopters, and some people who thought they wouldn't be able to do it. And of course, they are now thriving and their children are doing really well. So it's being able to tell multiple stories in a limited amount of time, actually. So...
Yeah, and it was brilliant, and absolutely brilliant. Deserves an Oscar. Yeah, it really does, and it was just amazing. I think I'm just going to keep going on about how amazing it was. It just really, really was.
Well,
but
you're
I
very
was thinking,
kind.
Yeah, it just was amazing. Do you have plans for a second season? Do you have ideas?
Well, the thing is, James, I did have plans. I had plans for a second and third season, but sadly, the BBC didn't recommission a second series. And so I had to have a little, well, quite an extended moment of grief about that. However, there is a silver lining here, because I am developing it as a stage show. So that is in process. I can't say much more about it at the moment, but I am developing a stage show. So the world lives on. So I'm really, really delighted about that. Yeah.
And do you think that the cast that were in the TV show would be doing the stage show, or can you not say that yet?
I mean, who knows? It's all up for grabs. I suppose it all depends on how long these things take and where those people are. And, you know, all of the things like casting depend on so many different influences and reasons and all of those things. But, I mean, I'd be lucky to have any of those actors in the stage show, obviously, if it were up to me.
Yeah, I really, really hope that... I can't wait. I'll definitely be the first one to see it.
Hey, yeah,
really.
Well, I'll welcome
to
you to the front row.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that would be amazing. But I was thinking, you know, sort of as an icebreaker. I don't think we actually needed one. I think we went into it really, really well. But I was thinking, you know, what's your favourite TV show and movie? And I know how difficult it is to answer a question like that, so you can pick as many as you want.
Yes. Do you know, I always kind of dread this question. When I used to go for meetings with production companies, I would have to write down a list every single time I went, because I would just forget when people would ask me the question, and I'd just have this kind of slight like rabbit in the headlights. But I suppose more than a favorite TV show, I can point you towards people's writing, for example. And I would say, I mean, it's no secret that I'm a massive fan of Russell T. Davis, obviously, because of everything that he's done and the influence he's had on my life. And in fact, I got to email him before Lost Boys went out to just and I've been intending to do this for a long time, but I wanted to say thank you for all the shows that he'd written and the influence that they'd had on me, not just as a, you know, as a Welsh person, as a gay person, as a human, but all as a screenwriter, all the things, you know, his breadth of writing, it's diverse and wide and it's populist and queer at the same time, which is something I've always really been interested in, about how do you take minority stories for and put those stories and characters on a a prime time stage or screen.
He's always been a very kind of progressive writer, as in, you know, Queer as Folk. I mean, I haven't watched that, but I'm sure that was during your time. I don't want to say how old you are, but
oh, have you not?
I'm sure.
Yes.
No, I've seen like bits and pieces to go and watch that, because I know I've heard great things about it.
Well, let me tell you, James, when that came out, I was 19 and a student in Edinburgh, and I remember seeing the billboards advertising in Edinburgh, and it was like all my Christmases had come at once, because I had never seen. I mean, it was just not that type of representation was not a thing. I mean, people were having kittens when there was a lesbian kiss on Brookside, and it wasn't even, you know, it was literally like a peck. It was, you know, there was nothing. I mean, honestly, when I was growing up, it was like, well, there was a gay character in EastEnders, and people were literally front page news of the tabloids. So to have Queer as Folk, which was at the time really, it was radical, because but it was a representation of the way that some young gay men, not all, of course, but some young gay men were leading their lives. And then, you know, so there was that with Russell, and then he also then went on to do something like Doctor Who, and having visibly queer characters within that just happened to be, you know, and there's just this kind of showman in Russell's writing. And I think what I love about him is he has this sense of humour, as well as can tell emotional and profound stories. And another writer who I think does that is Sally Wainwright. So, yes, you know, with shows like Happy Valley, which are, they are dark, but they're hilarious. And the characters are just, from the get-go, if you read a script, you just get those characters immediately. I learned so much about screenwriting from reading Russell and Sally's work, actually, because I think a lot of drama, there's amazing British drama, but a lot of drama is quite, I was going to say dramatic. What I mean by it is, like, often with no humour. Often it's quite humourless, and often it's not character driven. It's much more plot driven. It's about the spills and thrills and reversals, all of which are fabulous and fun. And I want to have my cake and eat it. I like it when something feels authentic and real. And
like comes the character
from a place
at the heart, like the character is
totally
the heart of it all.
Totally. I mean, you must know this as a writer. It's that thing about, you know, I was always taught this from when I was studying plays, about that, you know, that character is action. It's about the choices that characters make, not because the plot's going to be thrilling, but because we really believe that character would be making that potential choice in that complex and nuanced situation. That's the thing, that's the knotty terrain of drama that interests me, and it's the writers who are able to articulate that within their scripts that delight me the most.
Exactly, and I think that's definitely something I'm trying to master at the moment, you know, really getting to just the heart of characters and that being the centre for, because, you know, I think if it becomes plot driven, it's a bit boring, you know, and not very interesting. And and if you don't have good characters, you don't really have a good story. And I think that's really important. And you know, I've met Russell quite a few times now, and he's such a nice guy, such a nice bloke, and gave me some really good advice when I first met him. and like you, you know, I grew up with his writing, you know, Doctor Who and Sarah Jane. And then I've got, as I've grown older, I've got to see a lot of his other dramas, like Years and Years and It's a Sin, both really, really good. And then obviously he came back to Doctor Who, and very relevant to this conversation, he did a story arc about adoption, which, when that came up, I was so happy and excited and thrilled, because it really paralleled kind of my own life journey. Because, I mean, you know, in Jodie Whittaker's era, it was revealed the Doctor was adopted and a foundling. And sort of that quest that the Doctor went on during that era to find out answers very creepily came at the right time when I was starting to ask questions about my own birth family and wanted to find out more. And then in 2022, I think after the Easter special of Dead, I read my files for the first time. And that was a lot. There was information in there that I didn't know, and even after that, I hadn't really processed yet. You know, I've been on a really big journey of self-discovery these last few years, and Doctor Who has just amazingly, like, been there on that journey with me, and that's been just really amazing. So to have a character like the Doctor, who I've always looked up to growing up and really connected with, but didn't really understand why, but then when it was revealed that they were adopted, you know, and I think, you know, fans have so many opinions, but I think when you look at the history of the show, it just makes so much sense the Doctor is adopted. You know, it just fits so beautifully with their character, and just to have a character like that, and then Ruby Sunday, the companion, as well, to have two adoptees time traveling together, which is amazing. And I think Russell did just so well, you know, with that, because I think, you know, in the past, you know, adoption hasn't always been represented very well, and there's so many stereotypes and tropes out there that are very harmful. But I think that what Russell did really well is that he showed there was a lot of nuance in there that you don't really see. You know, I think he showed that you can have a happy, loving adoptive family, but that doesn't cancel out the curiosity of, you know, to find out where you come from. And I think, you know, not especially with Ruby, but because she's a foundling, she doesn't know where she comes, like, has no information at all, you know. I've seen some reactions on social media. I mean, why wouldn't there be, you know, like sort of thinking that Ruby has been kind of ungrateful to her mum, Carla, you know, for wanting to find out where she comes from and meet her birth mother and that. But it's not black and white, you know. It's
no,
you know, it's just because, you know, you want to find out where you come from and meet your birth family doesn't mean you don't think that your adoptive family aren't enough, you know. They're two separate things, and I think that's kind of one of the misconceptions society has about adoption, is that it's, you know, you've got your adoptive family now, that's kind of it. But it's the start of a, you know, it doesn't end when a child is adopted. It's the start of a really long, complex journey, I think, for both parties involved, you know. And I think, I just loved how it was represented in season 1/series 14.
I want to pick up on two things that you said there about, you know, that having two adoptees time traveling. And it just struck me then that time travel is such an extraordinary metaphor, really, for people who experience the adoption process as an adoptee or an adopter, because you're constantly having to travel through time. So even when, you know, we were adopting for the first time and we had their later life letter given to us, and I read the beginning of that letter at the time, which starts with, "I was your social worker," and you probably don't remember me, but I was your social worker. And suddenly I was propelled forward in time into that moment where I might have to, you know, where I would share that letter. And it was a very profound feeling of existing in multiple times simultaneously. And we do this with our children, don't we? Or, as you know, because as you say, it's about it's about being able to accommodate all that past within this present and move forward into an integrated future together, which acknowledges the importance, as you say, of that past and why, you know, for us as adopted parents, we fully expect and support and hope that we will be able to experience that at when if they have questions and they want to know. And, you know, we're keeping those channels open or hoping that we can explore that in the future. You never know, of course, how it's going to turn out. But that would be our thing. And we wouldn't feel at all that our children were ungrateful for wanting to explore who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
It's who they are. It's where they come from. It's that, you know, they are as much. I mean, I always think this. I don't know. Sometimes I think as gay parents here that we are, you know, we've never felt threatened in any way, for example, by the idea of the birth parents, the idea of the birth mom, or the, you know, because actually, and despite whatever the context of their adoptions are, there will always be gratitude in my heart, because it means that, you know, they gave life to my children. And so we all belong in this interweaving and interlocking, sometimes very challenging, puzzle, this kind of fabric of life. And it's all comes, and it's, but it's nowhere is it more knotty and knotted than in our children, as you know. So yeah. you're the ones who have to really carry it, you know. And so it's a profound thing to be able to acknowledge all of those things. And so I'm not surprised that Doctor Who speaks to you, you know, in that way.
It's always been about kind of the Doctor adopting family, you know. They've always had a very deep need, like want to belong, and, you know, just the themes of Doctor Who, belonging, I mean, apart from the sci-fi themes, you know, but there's the more human themes like belonging and family and identity. And I think that just fits so well with adoption. And Chris Chibnall, who wrote Jodie Zero, did a podcast with another adoptee and spoke about sort of the reasons behind why, you know, he introduced the Doctor being adopted and his own personal story, you know. And the interviewer, the host, you know, she says that I think as adoptees we're quite naturally storytellers, because we're always asking the story of our own lives, like, what is the story of our own lives? And I think that's definitely been a huge factor in sort of my interest in becoming a screenwriter. And I think it's always been there, but it was really sort of during COVID where I was like, oh, I really like this, actually. I think I'll write more. And then here I am. I think just with Doctor Who and really bringing those themes to the forefront and showing just how well it all works, just brilliant. And that scene at the end of series one where Ruby meets her birth mother, funny story, actually. I went to Manchester to see a friend who's actually an adoptee as well. We'd met over the youth advisory group of Adoption UK, and a few days before it was shown in cinemas, the finale, we said, oh, why don't we see it together? You know, because we can both really resonate with it and it'd be good to see it together. And we went to The View in Media City. And then I see Phil Collinson walk in, the producer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, that can't be. And then Russell walks in. And I'm like, what? I'm so glad I decided to come up. And, you know, I said hi to him and he remembered me from before. And then, you know, when Ruby met her birth mother in that really powerful emotional scene, I cried. I could not stop crying. And yeah, I loved the, because I think in media, kind of the trope of I guess, adoptees and foundlings, the fairy tale kind of tropes, is that if there's unknown parents, their parents will be big and powerful beings, or like gods, or
Yes.
kings, or queens, or some kind of, I don't know, you know, big, powerful being. But what I loved is that actually Ruby's birth parents were ordinary humans, and you know, it was sort of the ordinary being made extraordinary. And I absolutely just, I loved that so much. Yeah, it was just amazing. And you know, on top of Lost Boys and Fairies, just another of my favourite kind of representations of adoption. And I think especially 73 Yards, amazing episode by Russell. And such a beautiful kind of, I guess, allegory, metaphor of abandonment issues, because you have, you know, the woman 73 yards away from Ruby who causes people to abandon Ruby, and but then there's also the kind of the lack of, I guess, knowledge of what her birth mother looks like, and that's why the woman's at 73 yards away, because you can't quite see what she looks like. And I love that kind of the allegory of what it's like to be adopted, and specifically a foundling, which I don't know what that's like, but I have the most insight into what that is like, because, you know, I mean, I had pictures of my birth family growing up, but no idea as to kind of who they were as people. And not to go into too much detail, but I reconnected with my birth family in April, and that has gone a bit awry, and I've had to end contact recently. But you know, I think you growing up, you kind of mythologize your birth family, and they become kind of like a fairy tale in your mind. And like, I think, you know, that was actually quite beautifully shown in Doctor Who, is that they become very mythical, and you can kind of invent all kinds of stories about them. I think, you know, you see that with Tracy Beaker, because, you know, she was kind of inventing all these stories about her mum, that she was a Hollywood actor, you know, an actor in Hollywood, or a journalist, or just these very big like mythical ideas. Because, you know, when you are disconnected from your birth family, from those people, it's really easy to then kind of, as a coping mechanism, build up these stories about them. I think adoption and stories are just very intertwined with each other.
And as you say, I mean, it's no wonder that you mythologize and you create, and you sort, and I love what you were saying there about as children who are adopted are often to be great storytellers, because you're absolutely, because what happens, you get your life story book right from the beginning. You see the prism of you see your life through the prism of story, you know, and, you know, and origin stories and where you came from, and there's something, and the life story book, of course, they're written in age appropriate language, so there is almost a kind of a fairy tale element to the language, perhaps, the storytelling. So there's something very, very interesting that as humans who are used to seeing themselves through the prism of story, that they should go on and tell stories. And I think what's really exciting here is that, you know, that you've gone on now, and you're interested in screenwriting, and we're talking about representation, and we're talking about the fact that there's been a lot of very actual, like, negative representation. There hasn't been that much, far outweighs the positive representation.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And so we need people like you to tell your side of the story. You know, I've got my side, but I haven't been adopted. I'm a parent who's adopted, so I have, you know, a variety of perspectives there. But you've got your unique and wonderful perspectives on life that you should be sharing with the world.
Thank you. Yeah, I have so many ideas, you know, in terms of doing stories about adoption. There's just so many I really want to get out there. Definitely not ready yet. I think I'm still quite a baby writer, and
I didn't write my first play till I was 27, and you know, and Lost Boys and Fairies, let me tell you, was a few decades after that, so you've got time.
I'm also hate washing things. Yeah, it gets very overwhelming. But yeah, I think you're right with what you said about the negative representation of adoption, and it far outweighs the good. I mean, I've got a list here on the chat, you know, The Bad Seed, Little House on the Prairie, The Omen. I won't read
I mean, I even referenced The Omen in Lost Boys, actually, because it's made Gabriel very paranoid about adopting. He keeps mentioning Omen.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, no, that's a really good way of showcasing sort of the how media like that then impacts how people view adoption. And I think, you know, my brain's so chaotic.
You don't sound chaotic at all, James. You're being incredibly articulate if you ask me.
Thank you. That's difficult for me. But I think, like, because there's a lack of adoption, a lack of authentic adoption representation, positive, nuanced adoption representation. You get things like Orphan and Case 39 Loki and Thor. And I mean, it goes all the way up to, you know, 2025. And I'm sure it won't be the last thing that betrays adoptees as criminals. I think that's a big, you know, as broken, damaged goods. And I think a lot of the time it's written by people who aren't adopted. And, you know, I don't like insulting people, and I'm not going to, or talking bad about people, but it's just very harmful when you are taking such a personal, very sensitive reality, and especially without consultation, maybe just hearsay from a friend of a friend who has a cat's owner's cousin's daughter who was adopted or something, you know. But you know, I think so much of this media has been written by people who just don't understand the reality of adoption and do more harm than good with
And the thing is, I feel it very strongly. There's such an ethical responsibility in terms of storytelling and broadcasting, because they are powerful and they do go to so many people's homes and lives, and cultural representation really, really matters. And in a situation where we know the need for adoption, there is such a need for adoption and for adopters and for children to find loving homes, you know, it's that which is at the heart. So to exploit the anxieties and fears, of which there are many, of course there are, it's a natural part, without a kind of a sense of responsibility about that, is irresponsible, you know. And the excuse will always be, oh, but it's just story, it's just, you know, it's entertainment, it's good.
Yeah, I've seen that plenty of times.
It's always the question I have to ask is whether or not you, like, how would you, if you, the people you are representing, you have to sit in across them at a table, and that you can look them in the eye and be okay with how you represented those people. That's the question I'm always having with myself, going, you know, and sometimes, hey, it's very easy to forget, because when you're writing scripts sometimes, and there's different but the nuance of people's identities and who they are, you have to constantly interrogate. And that's why there's this huge team around when you screenwrite. But unfortunately, not everybody makes work with the same duty of care and the ethics that, for example, Duck Soup, the production company who I was working with in Lost Boys, did, and the BBC actually as well. They were so kind of careful about the not only all the identities represented in the shows, but also because it was inspired by lived experience, how I translated those experiences, though, that it was still a work of fiction. And it, you know, but all of those things matter, as we see with, you know, what's happened around Baby Ranger and other shows like that about truth and all that kind of stuff. It really, really matters. These are people's lives we are talking about, you know.
Exactly.
And so we have a duty of care beyond the sphere of entertainment.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, you know, when you don't have adoptees, you know, or adopters involved in that, and the person writing it doesn't have any kind of lived experience, should take just hearsay or basic understanding, and that doesn't go to people with lived experience. You know, you just get a lot of tropes and stereotypes and really like hurtful language. You know, I think growing up, you know, if there was ever adopted characters or foster characters, you know, the term you'd always hear was real parents or real mum or real dad. And that's something I've had to face in real life, you know, from people, not well, once intentional from someone, but most of the times the language they've picked up from media, you know, and books and TV shows and movies, you know, real parents, and you know, I've had to strongly, you know, say my parents are my real parents. They're the ones who have looked after me, who have raised me, who have clothed me, who are there every day when I come home, when I've gone home from school, and nag me. I make my dinner, and you know, I'm very fussy, and maybe makes me dinner I don't like sometimes. but they are my real parents, and yeah, that language, that it just shows how powerful media is, how powerful TV shows and films and books and audios are. You know, they really shape how people understand certain topics. And you know, I think, you know, like for example, you know, with trans people, you know, I think historically, from what I understand, they were always kind of portrayed as the villains of the story. And that was kind of the same with adopted people. I think it's kind of either been adoptees are the villains of the stories, or it's all very kind of fairy tale, very kind of, we gloss over the loss and the grief, and it's all just very happy.
Totally.
Do.
Or they, you know, blended families, and they're all living happily ever, you know,
there's no
sense of the loss or the grief or any of the trauma that's happened. They're just kind of having a lovely time, you know. It's very Disney in that sense. But
Disney,
you know,
you're talking
about the kind of the antagonist in drama there as well, which was the other, and because also on top of that is our social services as well, you know, and there's a real complexity there, because of course not everyone has positive stories, but many people have extraordinarily positive stories, except really I'm not sure if I'd have seen any positive representations of social workers at all on the telly.
Elaine,
I mean,
Payne.
I'm sure I probably had. You are?
Elaine the Payne from
you know, it's kind of like, it's being able to give positive representation as well, but often because it's drama, and drama is about conflict, the easiest way of creating conflict is to have baddies, you know.
Yeah,
black,
I remember
and white,
you saying
baddies.
This. I remember,
yes,
you saying
black
this.
And white baddies. And actually, I am much more interested as a writer, and I don't know about you, but in terms of that, humans are three-dimensional, and actually it isn't black and white, and what causes antagonism isn't because we are bad people, but because of the complexities of what the things that have made us. And actually it's much more interesting watching people in opposition to with each other trying to work through those antagonisms and those nuances, not so that good can triumph over evil in terms of human beings, but that we can triumph over the things that haunt ourselves and what that looks like, and that redemption can be had. And that in itself can be incredibly dramatic, if not more dramatic, because there's something I think more satisfying about being able to see the good in people.
Yeah, and I think so much more interesting than just very black and white, bad versus good, evil versus good. You know, it's there's complexity to humans, as we all know. And I completely agree. I think it's just such a much more interesting way to tell stories than just painting it as evil versus good. Yeah. I think, you know, what So kind of what I wanted to go on to is, so what were the things about adoption that you wanted to show, and I guess challenge as well, in Lost Boys?
Oh, yeah, that's really interesting. So, I mean, I think we've covered a lot of the things about, I mean, just for me to say, oh, I wanted to represent adoption positively, I think that's quite a grand thing to say in a way, because actually what I was doing really was I wanted to, I had a story I needed to tell, I wanted to, and it was a way of me exploring and processing my own experiences and putting that on screen. Now, if as a byproduct of that, it represents adoption positively, that's because of the positive experiences we had with the extraordinary people we encountered during that journey, from the social workers we worked with, the foster carers, you know, and our children, you know, and my husband and my family and all of that. So that's where that came from. And I also think in terms of the what I wanted to challenge possibly, which I think is an interesting one, because I do think a lot of people are put off by the idea that the process of adoption means that social services have to look into your life. And the question I always used to get was, oh, is it really intrusive? It must be so intrusive. How intrusive is it? And, you know, isn't there stuff in your life that mean, you know, I don't want to do it because I don't want them to find out about this in the past, and all of those kinds of things. And my answer would be, yes, it is intrusive in a way. Now, for someone like me, who loves to talk, actually, that intrusion, I didn't really mind it, because I found it very interesting, because I, too, am a storyteller, James, like you, right? And so actually to go through my childhood and pour through by the way that I was brought up and the psychology and all the things that could cause me challenges as a parent, I found that endlessly interesting. And so I didn't necessarily find the intrusion a problem. And also the other thing I would say, I also knew that it's from a very good perspective, because these are children who need a safe haven. They've been through exactly. So much already. We need to absolutely make sure it's watertight, that what they come into, you know, and then it often isn't, you know, but they have to do what they can to try and make sure that we have a strong foundation from which to build that adoption in the first place. Exactly. But I wanted to chat, you know, I have a path, and everyone has a path, and we are all flawed beings, right? And that doesn't mean, and there are some things in my past that I thought, they're probably going to be problems. And the extraordinary thing is, of course, is they weren't. And what I love about Gabriel's story, in particular in Lost Boys, is it demonstrates that he had issues with crystal meth in the past. He had addiction problems. He had, you know, problems overcoming issues with his sexuality and sex addiction and all sorts of things. That a really tricky, tricky time. But actually, one of the lines I love the most in that series, you know, that when Jackie talks about the fact that, adopters who have lived through trauma and experienced trauma, actually, that gives them a power to be able to parent children who've lived and experienced trauma, because it is only through that knowledge of going through something and coming out the other side and understanding it that you can then identify and empathize and support your kids. And so there was something in that I wanted to show positively, that, you know, if you think there's something in your past that makes you not fit to be a parent, then don't necessarily think that. Pick up that phone, talk to social services, be honest about it, be truthful about it. I mean, I wasn't at the beginning, because I was, you know, it took me time to be honest and truthful about it. And I know I was terrified about some of the, you know, but actually, this was what was amazing, the way that our social worker dealt with those things and where we've got to. And now, you know, 9 years later, I'm a parent to three kids, and I think we're doing all right, you know?
And I think, you know, they made the right decision, because you're amazing, and you just have such a open, very, you just make such a perfect adoptive parent, you know?
Hey, listen, no one's perfect, and I definitely not.
But I mean, you're definitely there.
Yeah, well, I think my children might disagree with you that I'm a perfect adopted parent. But, you know, we're doing all right. We muddle through, we get there. And actually the thing, you know, and actually that thing about being able to acknowledge and consider your past and repair from that has just been such a great thing with my kids as well, is that you can always, you know, whatever happens, you can always repair and move forward and articulate and apologize and explain, and everything is a moment of learning.
I think especially with our community, that's so true. And I think, you know, because when I was adopted back in 2004, I can't believe it was that long ago, even though it wasn't actually that long ago. I mean, there wasn't a lot of adoption support. And so actually there wasn't any adoption support, really. And so when my parents adopted me, it really was a case of a few visits from the social worker. That's it. Off you go. Happy dappy do. And that did cause a lot of issues for me, because you are leaving a traumatized child with their trauma. And I was left to deal with that on my own. I mean, obviously I had my parents, but even they didn't understand. And I think one of the biggest misconceptions still to this day is that babies and infants can't remember trauma. And the thing is, that's because people are thinking about picture, photographic memory. But even before, you know, we retain photographic, even before photographic memory starts, the body remembers what it's been through. And when a baby, because I was 2 months old when I was removed from my birth parents, and even when I was 2 months old, that would have been traumatizing, because everything I knew had just disappeared, and I was in this you know, unfamiliar environment. And then there's also the impact of violence on babies and infants, and I understand the impact of that completely, because growing up I've always been very hyper vigilant of people raising their voice and shouting at me, and that's made me go into fight or flight survival mode. I tend to fight, and I'm not doing that because I'm naughty or bad or being a bad child, but it was my threat response. Because what I was perceiving was a threat, and I was trying to protect myself from that. And it's not until the last few years that I've discovered all of this, and really sort of looking back at my life, I'm like, oh, it just makes so much sense. And that really helps with identity as well, because, you know, you weren't just doing it because you were being naughty or just for the sake of it, or even because it was to do with being autistic or ADHD, you know. And I think that definitely contributes to a lot of the things. But it's not, I think the adoption, the care experience stuff I've gone through has really fed into that. And it just makes it even more difficult then, because it then masks. What I found growing up is that my issues have been masked, because like, for example, during school, primary school, I was being diagnosed with autism by CAMS, but the CAMS on the school, like, oh, you know, it's because he's adopted. Even though there wasn't even that much awareness of the impact of adoption, or it was because my mum, unfortunately, when I was 7 years old, had a brain hemorrhage, was on a business trip, and that night, you know, Boys and Fairies, obviously, Gabriel's mum,
of course, it's a
dies, I think, from a brain hemorrhage, doesn't
yes, she does. Yes, she does. When and he's that, 7 years
that was old, really, oh my gosh, 7 years old. Yeah. I didn't realise that, and that hits me even more now, because I nearly lost my mum, and that brought up all those feelings of abandonment, you know, that I had already sustained from, you know, being removed from my birth parents and birth family, and having multiple foster families and attachments just coming and going, and then my mum nearly dies, and that was just so much. But the primary school were like, that's why, you know, he's challenged, you know, he's got difficult behaviour. And so there was just a lot of masking growing up.
Well, I mean, you're talking about that. What it's so fascinating you speak there, James, because you're that intersectionality between what is, you know, what is typical, which I use in inverted commas, you know, childhood behavior, which we always have these questions, but with children who've lived through trauma and neurodivergence and the intersections of those things. You know, I am, and I don't know if you know this, but I am also autistic, which I've, you know, it's something that's that I've learned later in life. But the I'm not adopted, but that from a perspective of there was a lot of trauma from bullying and queerness and queer shame. And I had come to a point of understanding, oh, the reason I behaved in these certain ways and the reasons I had issues later on was because of queer shame. But then you throw a whole of the neurodivergence into the mix. I had absolutely no idea. And then you, with you, you throw in loss and adoption. Like, those are incredibly complex. And actually, do you know what? Society is only just catching up. The thing is, definitely. Internally, you are ahead of the curve, and you know, in within yourself, you will have more knowledge of how those intersections work, but it's very, very complicated in terms of being diagnosed from the outside and people understanding how to meet those needs.
Exactly.
And what I think is, you know, it's all credit. I do think it's extraordinary listening to you speaking so articulately about these childhood experiences. My goodness, if I could speak like this when I was your age, I mean, I feel like I would have reached enlightenment, quite frankly, because it's taken me decades to get to a place where, and still, you know, where I can even have self-knowledge of these things and the intersections and how they work. And yet you're here teaching me and talking to me about it with such kind of emotional articulacy, you know, and you're going to make a great writer because you've got that knowledge, and you can you've got these perspectives, intersectional perspectives that you can bring storytelling, and a multiplicity which naturally comes with that. So I'm so excited to see what you can do with that.
Thank you. Can I just say that wouldn't be possible. All of this I guess this journey of identity, of self-discovery, of understanding how my trauma has impacted me wouldn't be possible without connected. So at the celebration, the NAS celebration, you won't forget her. Ruth dragged you off outside so we could speak. You know, the social workers were gathering around you, and she got you outside. Love Ruth. But she's the manager of Connected, which is a youth service for adoptees in Wales. And we meet up once a month, different age groups. We meet up once a month and do an activity. But having youth workers and having Ruth, who has really helped me to unpick and unpack all of that complicated stuff and how it's all impacted me. You know, having a service like Connected is so beneficial for adopted people, and I think and even adoptive parents, because it means that they can create a community from that and be able to kind of share their struggles and challenges and what works for them and what doesn't work for them and what needs to change as well. Because I think even now, support with adoption, I think there's still a way to go, you know, with that. And I think, you know, especially with all ages as well, not just children I think, you know, because once you turn 18, support kind of drops, really. And then you have the older generation of adoptees and historic adoptees who are having to fight for, you know, having to fight to be seen. I think that is just, you know, really a kind of a way to go with that, really. So I guess to kind of wrap this all up, really, what's your favourite pieces of adoption media? And you can't say Lost Boys. It's amazing, but you can't say Lost Boys.
My favourite? Do you know what? I don't... When you ask me that question, I'm sure there are, but I'm not sure if I really saw. I mean, I'm interested in knowing, I'm throwing it back to you.
No worries.
I'm interested in knowing, but you've spoken about Doctor Who very powerfully there, you know, and that was, and I agree with you there, but I'm curious to know if there's anything else that really appealed to you.
Yeah, I think in the last few years, you know, I've seen This Is Us, which is on Disney.
And that's
about triplets, yes. One of them adopted, and that beautifully portrays adoption, and I think especially transracial adoption, which I can't understand, but I think it's a very needed story, a very needed awareness, really, as I think all sides of adoption really need awareness, because there's just such a lack of. But yeah, This Is Us is quite a good TV show, and I definitely recommend that. It's on Disney Plus, you can check that out. I'm trying to think of any others. I mean, there's Lion the movie, which was based on a true story, mm-hmm. about someone who was adopted from India and retraced his steps back to where he came from. Yeah,
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it's an interesting thing, because as when I was growing up, I probably, for you were looking for that representation. Now, I probably was only concerned with that representation after we'd gone through the process ourselves. And I was probably particularly looking at representation of the experience of adopting as a parent. And I just really, actually, I wasn't seeing it. I was more seeing the, because when I went through that first year, it was so dramatic. And I went, this isn't what I've seen on screen at all. As you say, it kind of just glosses over the challenges and the difficulties of it. And that's why I went, I have to write about this, because nothing represents what I've deemed as my own personal experience. And that's why, but I think that's what we do as storytellers, you know, and that's what you will do as storytellers. As a storyteller, you will identify where you will see where the gap is, the lack is, and then you can step up into the breach and fill it with your glorious stories.
Thank you. I really hope so, because I'm definitely not the most confident person. That's an understatement, but, you know, I really... you know, just have such a passion to bring the reality of adoption from, you know, the adoptee's perspective, because there really isn't anything.
Exactly.
And I think, but I think what I loved about Lost Boys and Fairies was that we got to see Jake's perspective and that really emotional scene where we see him covering his ears when his birth mother, and is it father or partner? Like a current partner.
His birth dad. Yeah.
Are fighting and what something that I really resonated. Something that really resonated with me was when Jake and Gabriel and Andy are at the park, Victoria Park. And that's another. That's also not just about a TV show about adoption, but set in Cardiff, set in Wales, and Welsh speaking as well. But you know that scene when they're at the pavilion. And Gabriel raises his voice and, you know, Jake backs off, you know, threatened.
Yeah.
And you know, that was very powerful. But I think there's just such a way to go with representation of adoption. And I hope that, you know, I think if you are a writer listening to this who isn't adopted, and in the future you have a TV series or a movie where you have adopted characters speak to people with lived experience, because that's so important. You can't write on what you think it might be like. You have to go to those who have lived it and have experienced it and you know, gone through it all, because it's so complex. It's a huge world. And so, yeah, I think my hopes really are that we see an increase in authentic shows about adoption. And I'm sure, you know, in the future, maybe you'll create more shows or you know, things, material that showcases that. And I hope I can do the same as well.
Yeah, I won't need to if you're doing it. It's all good.
I don't want to be the only one.
No, you don't need to be the only one. We need many storytellers, don't we? Mm, we need many storytellers. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for today. It's gone so much better than I thought it would. Is that the right way of saying it? I don't want to sound, does it sound rude? Thought it would or thought it wouldn't. Yeah, I'm always second guessing myself.
I understand totally.
I think that's like an autistic ADHD thing. But yeah, it's just been so amazing. Thank you so much for doing this, Dav. It's been amazing.
It's been my absolute pleasure. I think you're a hero. I genuinely mean that. Thank you. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you.
Wow, I'm stunned. That was just such a fascinating conversation. I'm so glad you came together, you two. I just want to put a word in for a series on Apple that I don't know if you've seen it, James, called Trying. It's like I don't know how many seasons there are, but quite a few to get your teeth into. And it's written by Andy Walton, who is an adoptee as well. Borrow an Apple login off someone. Apple TV.
Yes, you know what? I haven't seen that yet. And it was partly because I think it was coming out very I was writing Lost Boys, and sometimes if you think there's something in similar territory, you kind of don't want to go there in case you feel you want to write your own thing, in case you start feeling like you're ripping something off. And I still haven't seen it, so that's a very good chapter.
It's good.
Yeah,
that's one thing I need to watch. It's really, really good. Yeah.
So I think with being, you know, having ADHD, you just like watch one thing and then you get distracted and go on to another thing and then you end up not seeing the thing that you kind of want to see. But yeah, that's definitely something I need to watch, because I've heard some good stuff about it.
Yeah, it's great. And if you like to like sink into a box set, you can definitely do it with that. It's great. So, well, I don't know where to start with this. We have talked to you guys have talked about absolutely everything: complex grief, gay couple adoption, single person adoption, future plans for the world of Lost Boys and Fairies, hopefully more about that later, Russell T Davies at length. A bit of fanboying about Russell.
Hopefully he listens to this podcast.
Well, I'll trust you when it's up to send the link to Russell T Davies and encourage him to listen, because you've fanboyed an awful lot about Doctor Who and the Doctor story arc.
Wait, have I?
I know. I expected a little bit of it, but there we go.
Yeah, that, to be fair, that's everyone around me. once I get onto it, I never stop.
No, it was really interesting. You've talked about myths about adoption, the responsibility of storytellers for ethical representation, and the duty of care towards the people being represented. You've talked about nuance and human struggle, the adoption process, intrusion, imperfection, benefits of repair. I mean, we have really been around the whole of human, all of what it is to be human here, trauma, hypervigilance, intersection of trauma and neurodivergence, which is a really fascinating topic that we should definitely pick up again, I think. And James, you've talked very powerfully about the importance of community for adoptees coming together with other adopted adults, which you've done through the Adoption UK Connected service. So I just wish to say a really massive thank you to both of you for a brilliant, brilliant conversation. And I hope you'll come back and share more with us in the future, both of you, about your plans and your work, screenwriting.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, try and stop me.
Thank you.
Great.
It'd be great. I've loved it. I mean, honestly, as you read all of those themes, I felt exhausted.
I can't believe you've covered all of that.
You know, a lot of that's you holding it together, James, so that's fantastic. So yeah, you've also got a career as a presenter.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I definitely have this kind of disconnect in a way from what I've been through. I still haven't fully processed the impact of it and how much it has impacted me. But I guess that could be a coping mechanism to kind of, you know, not collapse onto the floor. Because that's sometimes what it feels like, and you know, especially without support, you know, that leads to really bad mental health, and you know, without adoption support specifically, that leads to really bad mental health, and I've always really struggled with friendships growing up, and attachments and forming relationships, and that's led to numerous, you know, failed friendships, and then it's really hard to then actually attach properly. So yeah, it's a lot to carry in one brain, really. And you know, but I think that it's cathartic to write about it, because it helps you to understand it and process it, and but then also do it in a way in which it's not like a perfect, I guess, copy of your life. It's a like fictionalized version with people who aren't like you, but it's still got you and your life in it. Yeah.
Well, you did a brilliant job, James, and a little bit of bonus content there at the end for anyone who's listened right through to the bitter end. We'll put some links. So is Lost Boys and Fairies still available, Dav, on...
It is on iPlayer and other international platforms.
Brilliant. So we'll put the
link. Of course, because it's gone to America, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's gone to the States, Australia, Germany, France. Where else? It's got, quite a few territories.
That makes me so giddy, though, because Welsh, just international people seeing Welsh and seeing people speak Welsh, that's amazing.
Super. So we'll put the links up in the show notes anyway for anyone who hasn't yet seen it or would like to see it again. And we also mentioned Queer as Folk as well, which I hope, James, you're going to go off and watch, because it's absolutely, an incredible piece of drama. So I just want to say thank you again to both of you. Thank you to our listeners. Please subscribe if you can. Follow our podcast for loads more interesting content. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Thank you and goodbye.